Hey, welcome to the first ever episode of the Curious Curmudgeon Podcast. I am Barnabas Piper, here with my co-curmudgeon, Adam Reed. And Adam, I have a question for you to start.
We're just going
to
start out like this, just this way?
Yeah.
Just throw it at me?
Yep, just going to, we're not warming up, we're not bantering. I just have a question for you.
Okay.
I want to know what the first job was you ever had.
Oh, the first job I ever had, actually working for somebody else other than mowing lawns?
Yes.
Okay, so I worked
like
for...
Like the first one that you had to like report taxes on or like there was forms involved.
Yeah, the first job I had was actually, I worked for my sixth grade teacher. I went through sixth grade. He didn't work me in sixth grade, okay. Just to be clear. It was not, you know, child labor laws broken there. But yeah,
were different way back then.
Well, they were very different. He actually was the custodian for our church, the primary custodian at our church. Uh-huh. And so he needed help cleaning the church and all that. So he asked if I would help, and I agreed. And so I worked there for like 4 years, cleaning toilets and vacuuming carpet. And he's awesome. He actually had a huge impact on my life, more so through what happened outside of the classroom working for him and his mentoring me than it did when I was in the classroom, which was also, he's a great teacher, Mr. Countryman. So he's an awesome guy. So thankful for him. But when I had that job, this is my worst memory. Okay. We had this beautiful church auditorium, you know, and it was that design where the carpet was like that crimson red color.
Oh, yeah. Every church of a certain era had burgundy carpet.
It was just a thing.
I can
you
smell
had to
it
have
too.
It. Like, here's this beautiful carpet for you. It's like this walking on the red carpet thing. And so I vacuumed that every week for years. And then we had this time where I was taking a mop bucket to like the back bathrooms. And I got all the way up, like 20, 30 rows of pews, all the way to the front of the auditorium on the red carpet. And my mop bucket got caught on something, and I spilled bleach water all over the carpet area. I mean, it was just...
So you made the crimson white as snow?
It was not crimson anymore, I'll tell you.
I mean, I feel like there's something metaphorical
in
that. I
mean, it's one of those things where you're like, did I just do that? And then it's like... There's no way to fix this, right?
No, there's no one
no
doing
way
that.
To put that back. And my boss, Mr. Country, he was awesome. He was so gracious about it all. But I felt horrible. I still feel horrible, although I think they've now changed the carpet and the red spots.
Yeah, it's probably taupe now, like every other church from a certain era. What's crazy is my first job was also church custodian.
Really?
Well, being a pastor's kid, that was my sphere of connections. And yeah, I was a part-time church custodian starting probably earlier middle high school. I probably did it for a couple of years. And the arrangement wasn't like a certain number of hours per week. It was certain areas of the church that needed to be cleaned.
You were responsible for a zone.
Yeah. So zones, which then meant it needed to be done at certain times. So it was like turning over the kids' classrooms between Sunday and Wednesday kind of thing. So yeah, I did that. And the best part about it was having keys to the church because...
there's got to be some stories there.
Well, they're just nothing sorted that I can remember. Nothing that I can recall. No, it was mostly just like I lived walking distance from the church and my house was pretty boring.
Okay.
So if I ever hung out with friends, we could go get into the youth room at the church and use the pool tables and the foosball tables and stuff like that. It was sort of like an extended cool basement kind of for us. So that was my first job as well. And I don't recall any particularly bad memories from that one. Other jobs, yes, but not that one. But that sets up the topic for today. And, you know, listeners, I mentioned in the intro episode, the theme for this season is major life changes. And so today we're going to be talking about changing careers and on a whole bunch of stuff that goes with that. Once you get well settled in adulthood, you realize that there's an enormous amount of stuff wrapped up in career, in work.
For sure.
It takes up the bulk of our waking hours. It is utterly necessary for us because otherwise we can't pay any bills. It's sort of a can't live with it, can't live without it situation a lot of times. And then we could cover in a huge amount of ground. There's so much that could be said here, rather than starting by dispensing advice or trying to be life coaches, which I don't know what a life coach is, but also I know I'm not one. So rather than starting there, I feel like a better place to start would be sharing just a little bit about our own career arcs.
Okay.
And then jumping from there into some thoughts about, okay, job changes, why, how, those kinds of things. So
okay if it's like a career zigzag?
Yeah.
The arc is... Nice smooth line.
Yeah, that sounded a little bit life coachy, didn't it? Let's go career path.
Okay.
Yeah. So it could be switchbacks. It could be fell off the side of a cliff. Not really sure where that path goes. Yeah. So career path. So we both shared where we started. So Adam, that was your first job. But in terms of sort of professional career, what does it look like for you in brief? Because obviously we could talk at length about everything we've done.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot there. So I went to college for radio and television broadcasting, changed colleges, graduated with a degree in biblical counseling, you know, because those things really connect real well. And then I went and I had the privilege of pastoring two different churches, 6 years or so each. And one as assistant pastor and then one as the children's pastor. And loved it. Loved the opportunity I had. Loved working with people. It was really a great time in our lives, seeing what God was doing in the church and working people's lives. And there was just some things changed, some of it health-wise with me, and we just had to find some other options. And the Lord opened a door for me to become an engineer for Positive Alternative Radio, Spirit FM. And so I decided, my wife and I prayed about it, and God made it very clear to us that this was what we were supposed to do. So that was about 6 years ago, and I did the engineering role for a while at Spirit FM. Really enjoyed that. Had a lot of opportunities there to meet people, just see how the Lord's using Christian music and radio and conversations about Christ in people's lives. But about a year into that, I had some more health problems and just couldn't keep up with the engineering role. And so transitioned over to the director of digital technology. That means if there's something that exists and it's more of an outward-facing digital infrastructure, that's probably something that I have a hand in somewhere.
Yep.
So websites, apps, you know, some of our other podcasts that we have, other things like internet site security for our websites and all that. So I've kind of had this really weird path that hasn't been smooth as far as, oh, that makes a lot of sense. It's all just kind of gone all over the place. And here I am today, and the Lord's been faithful, and it's been definitely some hard times looking at things, thinking like, oh, that's kind of like not exactly where I thought the Lord would have me at this point in life, but still just trying to, in spite of the hard times, trust God and follow whatever he leads for us. So yeah.
You mentioned the zigzag idea. I kind of feel a little bit like that for myself as well. So I went to school at Wheaton for my undergrad and got a Bible and theology degree. I got that degree because I had no idea what I wanted to do when I grew up.
Okay.
You know, tried multiple different majors and landed on that one. And then moved from that into a sales position. So finished college, moved into a sales position at a Christian publishing company. And just because that was the available job, I was on the verge of getting married. I knew I needed to have something stable. And turns out that was a really great career choice that I didn't know I was making. For about 14 years with a little gap in there. So I worked at that company for five-ish years and was in sales for the majority of that time. Kind of started in-house sales, you know, incoming orders from bookstores back when those existed and things like that. And then moving up into key account management. So like going out and selling to the larger chains and distributors and such. And then I actually got fired from that job due to my own foolish choices in the workplace, which there's a whole long story behind that that I've written about here and there, but how the Lord used that as part of a real sort of crystallizing and growing of my faith. But that meant that for the next couple years, 18 months to 2 years, I was out of the publishing game and I got a job at this little educational startup, which is a really quaint, cute phrase for the worst job I ever had.
Okay, I was wondering, educational startup, that's a little vague.
Yeah, well, here's what I've discovered. When business entrepreneurs want to start schools,
that's
a bad combination. Educators should educate and business entrepreneurs should make money and the two should not cross paths. Let's just leave it at that. But it was also a really formative job for me in learning a whole lot about why one works and how to work when it's not your dream, when nothing is going well and your coworkers are largely a challenge and everything about the circumstances was difficult. And I made 40% less than I did at my previous job and I had to work a side job just to pay the bills and all this stuff. So that was going on, but it was so profoundly formative for me. And then I was able to get back into publishing after a couple of years and worked in editorial acquisition, so bringing in books and marketing. And then it was the job switch from that to working at a publishing company, Lifeway, in Nashville, that moved me from the Chicago area to Nashville in 2013. And so I worked at Lifeway for 6 years as marketing, brand management, doing some church leadership development kind of projects, and then back into the book realm. And then in 2018 to 2019, felt the Lord's very much uprooting me from publishing, despite the fact that it was going really well at the time. I was in a really good spot, great team, enjoyed my work, and ended up being called into vocational ministry at the church where I serve now at Emmanuel Church. And that was a very unexpected pivot. So there's, you know, I know for both of us, like anytime you leave a job where there's a lot of roots, there's a lot of stories behind it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could spend hours talking about that, which would be wonderful for the two of us and really boring for everybody else. So, you know, what a listener just heard was the flyover version of a lot of difficult decisions about changes. You know, in some cases, the decisions being made for us, you mentioned health.
Yeah.
That's a decision that you were kind of backed into in some ways.
Yeah,
for me, you know, getting fired, it was my choices that led to somebody else's decision. But then also like a career switch, you know, moving from publishing to ministry. So I'm going to throw out a very general question for us to just kind of bat around a little bit. What are good reasons to change jobs? So there's a lot of people who are in jobs and they have at the back of their mind, maybe at the very front of their mind, constantly like, is this the right fit? Is this the right long-term option? Should I be looking? Should I be changing? Sure. And so just thinking about the underneath stuff, what are good reasons to change jobs?
Good reasons to change jobs. Well, I think there's a lot that could be said there.
Yeah.
A good reason could be it's just not financially able to support your family, right? Like that's a pretty upfront one of someone that needs, they're living wisely, they're trying to do the best they can, but it's simply not enough to be able to support their family would be a pretty understandable reason, I would think.
Well, and that can't be understated because especially in the Christian world, we have a weird relationship with money. And so I think there are people who legitimately feel a twinge of guilt at that thought of, I should take another job to get paid more. And they're like, is that okay?
Is that like a love of money
thing? Is that greed? Is it a love of money thing? And I think we should always be conscientious of the possibility of love of money. That's an ever-present temptation. But like the criteria you just gave, that's a pretty selfless criteria. I'm responsible for the well-being of others. Mm. Also, like there is something to be said for just sort of solidifying your life.
Sure.
So yeah, I want to say that having a financial motivation is not inherently greedy. It certainly can be, but it can be. It can also be wisdom.
Yeah. And I think that's part of like stewardship, not just financially, but stewardship of your family, right? You're watching out for the good of others and you're trying to make sure that they have what they need to be able to survive and have their needs met and hopefully be able to thrive. So there's certainly a side to it that can be selfish if done for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. And there was an instance where, so it was during my time at Lifeway, which was a great 6 years. I had been with the same team. So Lifeway at the time was a really big company. It was sort of like almost miniature companies within companies.
Okay.
And so I was working with one team and we were working directly with churches on training staff, leadership development, that kind of thing. But I had sort of plateaued career-wise. Just because it was a small team, there wasn't a lot of room for advancement.
Okay, yeah.
Went through a really difficult situation on the home life. You know, I'd gone through a divorce and, you know, with that comes a lot of cost. And so now I'm trying to make decisions on, like you said, how do I steward the responsibilities to my family? So I have two daughters at the time. And an opportunity came up to switch teams and get a pretty significant promotion.
Yeah.
And it was not a job that I was nearly as excited about the work itself.
Yeah.
I mean, the team was great. It ended up being great, but I didn't know them at the time.
Right.
And so I was leaving behind comfort. I was leaving behind good work. I was leaving behind a team that I loved working with to make a significant amount more money and to potentially have a lot more opportunity from there, sort of the like the long-term track of, okay, where does this position me?
Right. Yeah.
And so it was a business decision that I wrestled with. But also, it was absolutely the right decision because it was better for my family and ended up being very much better for me, too, in terms of my own development as an employee and a leader and a manager and those kinds of things.
Yeah. And I think sometimes, like, we feel like we can't look at the other options, you know, like we're told to be content where we're at. Mm-hmm. And I think we do have to strive for that, right? Every day, am I content? Is my contentment's not ultimately found in my job?
Yeah.
My contentment should be found in Christ. And so that can be a hard thing when you're looking at job changes and being like, well, am I just being discontent with where I'm at?
Yeah.
You know, am I being selfish about it? But I think, you know, God puts those opportunities in our past at times, and those are great things to take care of. So what is a good reason to change jobs that came to your mind?
I mean, there's some really clear ones, like the environment you're working in is real problematic. You know, that can have to do with ethics. That can have to do with what is being asked of you. If the work demands are killing you, you know, 12-hour days, multiple days a week without compensation, if there's been a lot of promises made and not met, if there's mistreatment in the workplace, if the work that your company does is work that you look at and you kind of discover, and you're like, I'm not even comfortable with what we're selling here or what we're doing. There has to be a certain amount of just, there has to be an ethical baseline, basically, of like, we're above board. So that's one that is, I mean, that seems obvious, but there are a lot of people who, for quote unquote security, stay with really bad jobs.
Right.
I also want to be conscientious. Not everybody is in a position where they have an abundance of opportunities to switch.
That's true.
You know, that depends on relationships, connections. Do you live in a major metro area? All sorts of different things. But that's one. I think you mentioned contentment. That's a tricky one. I agree with you, but it's a tricky one to discern. How much is my discontent my own sort of shallowness or sinful perspective, and how much is my discontent the Lord uprooting me?
Right.
And I think a helpful question for people in that is, well, what do you want instead? What are you seeking? So again, I only have me to use as an example here, but
yeah, go for it.
So 2018, I was working at Lifeway. I was managing two teams of people, and things professionally were going very well for me. At the time, Lifeway was in a really solid position, kind of financially, work-wise, things were going well. And I just started to feel this profound sense of discontent in my work. And not in a sense of like, I hate my job, because it wasn't that, nor was it like, I can't work with these people anymore, because it certainly wasn't that. But looking down the road and going, I don't think I can do this for 5 or 10 more years.
Right.
And so then I started questioning, okay, well, what is it that I want instead? What is it that I'm seeking? And it wasn't, I want to get paid more, because I was doing fine. It wasn't, I want to do something more meaningful. I mean, we were publishing books to teach people how to study the Bible. Like, this is pretty meaningful work.
Yeah.
And what I came to realize was, it was actually the Lord uprooting me from that job, because it's hard to leave a position when everything is going well, but he had something else in mind for me. So it was a few months of that. And I realized I just kind of came to the place of praying about, what might God have for me? Because God, I don't know what's next, but it seems like it's not this. I looked at other companies. I looked at various things just to go, is this it? And the answer was just no, 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 no. And then it was out of that, that the pastors at my church approached me and said, we think you should consider pastoral ministry, which was a shock to me. I did not anticipate it at all. But through those conversations and then the willingness to hear them out and to pray about it, I realized that what the Lord was doing was loosening my hold on one job so that I would be in a position to accept something else, which actually was what he had for me. So the question of what are you looking for helps gauge that discontent, because if you're discontent and what you're looking for is something that is morally better, or, you know, like, I'm discontent because everybody here is lying and cheating. Well, that's a good reason to be discontent.
Right, yeah.
If you're discontent because you're like, the next job will fill me up. It will fulfill my heart's dreams. Probably not. You're probably staking too much on your work. And so being able to gauge, like, is this a holy discontent in the sense of, I'm not settled here, versus a selfish discontent, which is, I have chosen not to be content, you know, which is a subtle difference. So weighing those two things is hard, but holy discontent is a good reason to leave a job. Like, this is not what the Lord has for me anymore.
Yeah. And you see certainly in scripture where God just moves people on to different locations and different things in life that they weren't prepared for, didn't expect to be there, but God clearly moved them.
Yeah. And he shuts some doors to what seemed like good decisions. I think one of the most kind of astounding verses in scripture is, you know, Paul talks about intending to go to maybe to Macedonia to preach the word.
Right.
And he says, the Holy Spirit prevented me, which Paul intended to go do a good thing that would have honored the Lord, and the Holy Spirit prevented him so he would go do a different thing that honored the Lord, or do the same thing in a different place. That is not unapplicable to customer service jobs or sales jobs or business in general. So that's not just ministry specific in the way that the Lord can do those things.
So I've been very privileged to be part of many jobs that are, you know, like ministry related, I guess. So if, from that sense, it's really easy to feel like they have purpose compared to when I worked at TCBY. Okay. So, although it was yummy. So what would you tell someone who's in the situation where they're working a job, it may be a fast food job or something that just feels mundane and it feels like there's no purpose to it. And so there's discontent generated from just feeling like, okay, I'm here and I'm doing my thing, but it doesn't really change the world. It doesn't really do anything. And, you know, I've had the privilege of being able to be part of things that I do feel like are changing the world, that are that are making a difference, right? But when I've worked some jobs, you know, filling vending machines, I didn't feel like I was changing the world.
Yeah.
And I just felt like I was lugging around a lot of soda.
Yeah. I think there's a couple answers to this that are true, but only as helpful as somebody is willing to receive them. And I began to get my head around these. You know, I mentioned earlier that window of time, 18, 20 months, when I was in a job that was, it was utterly pointless. What I spent my time doing every day was a complete waste of time. And working for and alongside people who were largely really unkind. It's a really, really bad environment all around. But thankfully, through my church, I had some men who were kind of walking alongside me and mentoring me, elders at the church, who began to speak some wisdom into my life about the nature of work and what the Lord wants from me. So, you know, the phrase in scripture, work as unto the Lord, I think that's in Ephesians. It's probably in Ephesians and Philippians because they parallel one another. That means work as if the Lord has given you the job. Work as if the Lord is your boss. And that doesn't mean looking over your shoulder, waiting to find every mistake, but like he's the one who's going to commend you for your work or raise an eyebrow at your lack of effort. And so that's a piece of it. I think even backing up to Genesis 1 and 2,
okay,
where the creation mandate to humanity gives work a sort of dignity. Did Adam do anything that we would consider purpose-filled today? He tilled the ground and he named animals.
Yeah.
That's pretty mundane work. He picked apples, and most of the ones he picked were good, and then there was one that he shouldn't have picked. But the work itself, throughout all of history, work has not been thought of as changing the world. It's just what's necessary because the view of life was not so self-centered. The view of life was, A, this is what the Lord's given me to do. There was a greater sense of sort of God's hand at work. And then also, like, this is just what it takes for society to work. Somebody has to bake some bread. Somebody has to pick up some trash. Somebody has to fix broken things and manufacture stuff.
Yeah.
We have, and I say we meaning, I'd say the last few decades of Western thinking have shifted work into a mindset of work as identity and work as fulfillment. And there's work that really matters and work that really doesn't.
Mm.
Well, that's godless thought. Mm. That's nonsense because God gave work.
Yeah.
God gave structure to society, which means work must be done at every point. And the dignity of work is in the dignity of the worker, which is given by God, not by the job itself.
Yeah.
Now, there are status-related things, and there's compensation-related things. And again, we attach value to those. So what I would say to that person is, this is a profoundly difficult thing to do in our society, but to take a step back and go, the dignity and the value of my work is not in the work. It is in the obedience to God, to doing what I'm asked to do and to doing it with all my might and with all my skill. Maybe an opportunity will come along that will be more societally dignified, but that's not how God views work. And it's not the place of work in the world.
So you're saying like if someone, you know, was working as, you know, a job that they felt was mundane, you know, like just kind of repetitious assembling in a factory line, right? Like there's a whole lot of people who do that. And they felt like it really wasn't that meaningful. If they do that job as unto the Lord with a hard attitude of wanting to honor God, that their job is just as purposeful in God's scheme of things as someone who is maybe in full-time ministry?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you think about verses in scripture that, you know, better is a crust of bread and peace in the Lord than a house full of riches and sorrow. Like, there's these comparisons that just, they just break down our human hierarchies of values. So,
interesting.
To be an honest, diligent, God-honoring assembly line worker, or like the person who works at, you know, Jiffy Lube Oil, and you just do the same task on every car that comes through there, that is more honoring to the Lord and more dignified in the truest sense of dignity than is being a CEO at a company that is marked by financial dishonesty and that is selling products that are harmful to people, that are cutting corners, that are mistreating employees, that's whatever. Now, the problem is when we hear a job title, we ascribe value to it.
Right, yeah.
You know?
You're right.
We hear, oh, manager, that means one thing. Oh, executive, that means another thing. oh, laborer, that means something else. We're called laborers for the Lord.
Yeah.
Like, laborer has always been a term of dignity in God's eyes. So obviously we're not going to change the world with this conversation, but my hope is that if somebody listens to it who is dissatisfied in their work, they can perceive their work the way the Lord does and the potential for it.
So their work is valuable because of them being created in God's image and then how they choose to live out honoring God through what they do. So their work is valuable because of them and their attitude, not because of necessarily the task that they're doing.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a gradation. It's not a clear blanket statement in the sense that there's definitely work that's worth more in terms of commodity and pay.
Right.
You know, if you have been trained to be a nurse, you offer a different skill set than somebody who has not, like that kind of thing. But if you are a skilled customer service representative, you know, I call the number and I keep mashing zero until I get to the agent, and you are helpful and you're clear and you're humble and you listen to my problem and you're sympathetic to my frustrations and you're patient with the fact that I'm mad before I ever started talking to you.
That's
not that that's ever happened.
It's not curmudgeonly at all.
Not even a little bit. You are giving a tiny glimpse of the dignity and the character of God in you through that interaction. That is not a small thing. I mean, the biggest problem that we have with this whole perception is that we are judging every single element of work according to standards that are not God's. And if you go look closely at scripture about what God says about work, he just doesn't grade the same way that the world does. And he is utterly unimpressed by earthly standards. He's not saying they're all immoral.
Right.
He doesn't say wealth is immoral. He doesn't say power is immoral. He does say those are temptations.
Yeah.
But rather that what defines goodness, dignity, value, it lives in an entirely different realm. And we just don't see things that way.
And I like what you said earlier about, you know, like we view our work oftentimes like it's very self-centered, right? As you step back, if you go back a couple hundred years, right, it was much more of an environment and ecosystem that you're maintaining by your work because of the way community was different then.
Yeah.
So community is still part of how we live, yet everything is so intensely personalized today throughout all sorts of media and marketing. It's all about us.
Yeah.
So seeing our jobs, our work as part of a bigger ecosystem, even if it's not something that we term important, it's still part of a larger group and happening that's still making a difference, and it's necessary. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with that. I think the words that just came out of your mouth are so un-American in terms of like, that made sense in 1942 or 1944. Like you think back to the war effort.
Yeah.
When people who were skilled in one thing set aside those things to either go fight or to go, you know, make rivets to build ships or whatever, like because the communal need and purpose was greater than the individual. And then, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s happened. And now you can't make me do communally anything. I will not value the greater good over my own good, which is part of the reason why there's so many tears in the fabric of society is the individualism. But yeah, the basic premise of fruitful work is working for the good of creation, God's creation. Yeah. And so what does that mean? That means a lot of things, but in large part, it means it is not working for my own individual benefit alone. And it should be part of a picture where if all of us are working for the good of creation, we're actually benefiting one another. And in the world, that doesn't really exist. It is the thing God will redeem someday, but it doesn't exist right now. In the church, it exists.
Yeah.
The church is kind of a microcosm of where that can still happen.
Yeah.
But, all the parts but in the world, it's pretty hard to find. Let me pose a question to you. I think it's come up kind of as an aside in some of this conversation. The idea of following your heart or pursuing a dream job, which it seems like the most common wisdom. I remember a conversation I had a few years ago. I was at Lifeway and it was kind of the very front end of that time when I was starting to feel unsettled. And I met a couple guys. This is Nashville. So everybody's a dreamer. Everybody's an entrepreneur. Everybody's trying to be great at something. And a couple guys in their 30s. And they asked me like, hey, what do you do for work? And I told them, they said, do you love your job? And I was like, I mean, no, but I'm thankful for it. Like that was my answer. I was like, no, not really, but I am thankful for it. And they're like, man, you should quit and go find something you love. And I didn't really respond. And I thought about it. I was like, that's the dumbest advice. Like that is just stupid. And with that mentality comes, you know, you've probably heard this phrase, find a job you love and you'll never work another day in your life.
Yeah.
And so, like, let me just put that whole pile of perspective in front of you. And is this good advice? How do people respond to this? What are your thoughts on the chasing of the dream?
Oh, man. I think as Americans, we're particularly pointed to this area just by what the society we're raised in.
Yes.
And I think that kind of predisposes us to think that way. Like, just find what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Well, I've found things that I love, and I've even had the privilege of doing them sometimes, but I don't love every day of them. And that's just reality. Like, we live in a fallen world. And I think that mindset of, well, find what you love and you'll never work a day in your life, kind of forgets the idea that we live in a fallen world.
Yeah.
And that my heart's never satisfied by the things of this world. And that this world is going to be tough. Like, there's going to be days when things are hard and don't go the way you want them to. And so there's a lot more going on in that statement. And it's so self-centered too.
Yes.
Like, if my goal in life is to just, okay, can I get out there and find something I love so I'm happy with it? If it's about me just wanting to do what I want to do so that I can love it and I can think that it's great, then I'm probably not focused on serving others well and loving God well.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the rub I feel with it. I mean, we could go into the whole phrase, follow your heart. That's a whole whole nother discussion if that's what we're looking at.
That's bad advice in many different directions, right? Not just careers.
Yeah, but in a career, like, I am called to work and I'm called to work hard. Mm-hmm. And God calls me to provide for my family. And so I will do whatever I can by God's grace to accomplish that.
Yeah.
And I'm going to work my butt off if I need to try and make those things happen. Yeah. But there's going to be days when it's hard. And finding things that are hard in our society, we like to just run from them.
Yes.
We don't like to embrace hard things. We don't like to push through hard things.
We don't see the value in hard things and the inevitability of them. Like, one of the things that this mindset believes is it does not believe in fallenness. You mentioned that a moment ago. Like, if you genuinely believe that find a job you love and you'll never work another day in your life, you are absolutely tacitly denying Genesis 3, where God tells Adam, by the sweat of your brow, you will bring forth fruit from the ground and fighting against thorns, and which is a very sort of poetic and time-specific description of work will always be a wash, rinse, repeat of hard work and futility. Which means, it doesn't mean everything you do will be pointless, but it means that when there's something fruitful, it will be accompanied by an enormous amount of labor, toil, and often fruitlessness. That's true for every job. That's true for pastoring. I love what I do. I love the people I get to do it with. I'm absolutely, like, pinch myself privileged, and there are days I want to put my head through a wall. Like, just, it's so hard.
It is.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
And other times. And what I discovered recently about pastoring, which is different than every other job I've ever had, there are aspects of it that I've really enjoyed and aspects that I've really hated, and they're not the same thing. And in pastoring, I've discovered those are often the same things. Ooh. You know, you sit down with somebody who's going through something difficult in life, and you have a really difficult conversation, and it is the best and worst part of the job simultaneously. But
so true.
It's not always fruitful. Maybe it's fair to say it's not often fruitful. Because people are, or I should say, obviously fruitful. I don't know what the Lord is doing in people's hearts. But all that to say, like, there's just this sense that people have of, if I find the right thing, everything will be perfect, which is just a denial of how the world works according to Scripture.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that's really, really helpful for me as I wrestled through this a few years ago was the book of Ecclesiastes.
Yeah.
Because Ecclesiastes, for people think it's a depressing book, you know, vanity of vanities, all is vanities, and that means that life is pointless. And it doesn't. It means that nothing in life is lasting, so let's not hang our hopes on things inappropriately. Mm. Because scattered throughout Ecclesiastes are also these wonderful phrases like, eat your bread with gladness and drink your wine with joy and take joy in the wife of your youth and these kinds of things. And then God says, for these are the gifts that I've given
you. Right, yeah.
And so we have these, work is a gift. Work that we love is a gift. Work that we hate is a gift too. But don't hang our hopes for fulfillment on those things. We need to hang the right-sized hopes on these. And the right-sized hope is, I'd like to pay the bills. I'd like to do some work that matters. I love the phrase you used earlier, the perspective of, I'd like to serve someone else through my efforts. Mm. So yeah, the idea of chasing a dream job is almost never good advice. And it's usually idolatry, I think. That doesn't mean we should all be passive. It doesn't mean we shouldn't take opportunities for advancement. But it means if we are perpetually discontent and looking for something else, that's probably our hearts, not the circumstances.
I think what you said there is important, that perpetual, like, I think there's always times when we're like, okay, can we do better, right?
Yeah.
Is there something else out there that would provide better? Or is there something else? Is there opportunity down the road? Like, those are things that we look at in a healthy perspective, trying to care for our family, care for our own needs, as well as hopefully be able to share God's provision with others, right? But we also have those times when, like, if all my focus is I've got to get to this level and I've got to get to this position and then I'll be happy. Like, again, it's buying into this lie that if I can just achieve this, like, I'm not quite there yet, so I'm not quite happy. But if I can get to this goal and I can get, you know, this amount of money, or I can have this power or this position that other people look to me and think I'm something, then I'll somehow be happy. I mean, that's a lie that's going to fall flat. So when you worked so hard for so long and you actually do somehow get to that point and you arrive there, the level of emptiness that's there is so blown up and inflated because you've lived with this idea that that was going to make you happy.
Your expectations got so big that the amount of emptiness within them is huge. Yeah. And the thing is, I want to be careful now because that this feels like a seesaw where we're like, well, I'm not saying this, but I'm also not saying this. I'm not saying ambition is wrong.
Absolutely not.
There's a book, I think it's still in print. Dave Harvey wrote a book a few years ago. I think it was called Rescuing Ambition. And basically about how ambition can honor the Lord rather than become prideful. Really helpful book. So ambition is from the Lord. Like, the Lord made us to be achievers.
Yeah.
Not to be sit on our hands and, like, wait for life to end.
If we had no ambition, we'd get nothing in this world to be done.
Yeah, I mean, every great movement of God has been driven by ambitious people. Paul was profoundly ambitious. Jesus was profoundly ambitious.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the patriarchs, profoundly ambitious. That, okay, so ambition is good.
Yeah.
Selfish ambition is bad.
Right, when it becomes about me.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we don't want to say that, like, you should never switch jobs. That's sinful. No, absolutely not. And oftentimes, it's almost an amoral decision. What I mean by that is, like, there are times it's wrong to switch, and there are times it's absolutely right to switch. And in the middle, there's a category where it's what you might call a wisdom issue. I'm trying to make a choice based on the information that I have that will honor the Lord and better the circumstances.
Yeah.
That's just wisdom.
Yep.
It's the same as, like, you know, deciding what school to put your kids in. Sometimes there's a very clearly right answer. Sometimes there's a very clearly wrong answer. Most of the time, it's a wisdom decision.
Right.
So I don't want to burden anyone's conscience who is in a work situation that they're wrestling through by, well, they said I shouldn't, or they said I should. No, I didn't. We didn't. We're not putting that on you. No. Well, Adam, we could go on and on and on about this, I suspect. For the sake of listeners, let's land it there. But before we go, we have two remaining segments that are of utmost importance. I teed these up in the intro episode. The first is something that we are going to do each episode, and it is the curious question of the week. And this is a question that we will throw out there, we will bandy about together, solely for the purpose of kind of letting our imaginations run and thinking creatively about whatever this thing may be. So the question for today is, ironically, given the subject matter, if you were to do any other job than what you do now, what would it be? So that could be, man, I'd be really good at this, or I've always thought this would be a lot of fun. And for your boss's sake, Adam is not thinking about taking this other job. This is just a, man, that would be super cool if.
Yeah, that's a tough question. And you know, you've really handed me every question so far. So I think you should answer this one first.
I have to answer this one first. All right. I love sports and I love coaching. I haven't done a ton in the last several years just because life has taken me a different way. So it would either be sports coverage, sports journalism.
Okay.
Or like high school football coaching. And I mean, who knows, maybe both of those together, because, you know, like, go coach, but then also write a memoir about the season. I love football. I love working with students. I used to do youth ministry. I have teenagers now, which in some ways has made me like teenagers less, but in many ways has made me think, man, this is a really amazing age and a great group.
It is.
And there's so much room there for growth and development, both as a person and in talent. Mm-hmm. One of the most rewarding things in the world is when you're coaching to work hard with a player on something and to see them get it.
Yeah.
Like, I remember I coached Little League baseball, and there was a kid who came in and he had never swung a baseball bat in his life. He's, you know, he's held his hands backwards. He didn't know how to stand. So I mean, like, we're putting his feet in the dirt. And about six games into the season, he makes contact and he forgets to run to first base. He's just like, ah,
I did it.
And like 2 games later, he laces a line drive into center field for a single. And I mean, it was like the World Series.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff.
That's awesome.
Or just like the little subtle, like work hard on a little subtle move and then you see a player get it. So yeah, I think coaching and or sports journalism would be it for me.
Interesting. Okay. I didn't see that coming. That's, you know,
this is why we pose curious questions.
And I was like, is this supposed to be like a wholesome answer? Like, you know, like this is the world changing job.
If you're like, you know, it'd be fun. Helicopter pilot.
I was thinking you know, the guys who like test drive the Porsches on the Autobahn or whatever, like that'd be great.
It'd be super fun.
But I think like when I went to college, I don't know that I realized how many different things there was in the world to do. Like,
yeah, I know we're about to send kids to college. And like, when I asked my daughter, what do you think you want to do? She has such a narrow perspective on what's available.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, you're going to have your mind blown.
Right. So I think looking back, I mean, I love what I get to do now. Most of the time, right? Just like we said, my boss is listening. I'm very grateful to be where I am. But as I think about like what would be a neat thing to do, I think, and it's going to sound weird because most people hate them, but I think being a lawyer or an attorney would be really interesting because I love the technicalities of it, but also like the aspect of being able to help people and like stand for justice if it's done rightly, right?
Yeah.
I think that would be really cool to do.
Well, I mean, one of the crazy things about working in a church is the number of difficult situations that you become aware of and adjacent to in people's lives, some of which need legal help and legal counsel. So I can tell you this, a trustworthy, ethical, hopefully godly lawyer is a profound gift when you can refer somebody to that person. I know they're not going to be gouged. They're going to be treated well. Somebody's going to really advocate for them, et cetera. So no, and at points I've thought, particularly when I'm argumentative, I wonder if, had my life gone differently, I would have made a good attorney. But then I realized how much school goes into it. And I think, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, right. All those years. I'll tell you the best, as far as just the most fun job I ever had was when I managed a coffee shop. Because everybody left happy, right? I mean, they come in and they're like, oh, I need this. And you give them what they need. And they're like, this was great. Thank you so much. And so That was actually really fun just because you got to meet so many people when everybody left happy.
All right, listeners, that was our curious question of the week. The question was, if you were to do any other job than what you're doing now, what would it be? Which brings us to our final and concluding segment, which is our weekly curmudgeon moment, which is a segment in which we just get to grump about something.
Yeah.
Like that is the entire purpose of this.
We bottled this up.
I know. We've tried to be nice. Enough of that nonsense. And this is a very short one. It is just texting etiquette.
Well, of course it should be done like in the theater. You know, during church is a great time.
With your ringer on?
With your ringer on. Yes, those are great things. I love the ringer on. That's a great point.
Yeah, I don't even remember the last time I heard my phone. I don't think I've had the ringer on since I bought it years ago. No, so texting etiquette. Here's my rant on this for now. Maybe I'll get inspired to go further, but growing up, there were no cell phones. I'm dating myself here.
Yeah.
Once I got into high school, cell phones became a thing, but texting wasn't a thing for several years.
Yep.
And now with smartphones, texting is the primary means of communication, and it has changed people's expectations so that the assumption is if I text you, you need to respond immediately.
Right? That
says
expectation.
Who? Why is it that just because you can send words to my pocket, I need to respond to them on your time frame? That's what I want to know.
Yes. And then if you don't respond in time, people think something's wrong. Like if you just...
Like between the two of you? Like, oh, why are you mad at me? It could be well,
maybe. Could be that. It could be like, are you okay? Was there an accident? Like, where are you at? And you're like, I'm just trying to get through the next thing in life. And like trying to pace texting, you know, your phone, just trying to pace that so it doesn't overwhelm your life. It's a really hard thing. There's several like apps that I just like, I have to turn off notifications for.
Oh yeah. I've started, I'm reducing my number of apps, period.
It was so overwhelming for me mentally just to have all these notifications all the time. And so I had to turn off so much and just leave it to like the basics, you know?
Yeah.
But I'll tell you something that's really funny. When texting first came out, it was like 99, it was probably the first year I had a phone. Or 2000 around there that had a texting.
It's kind of when phones ability. Kind of like you got into like the Motorola Razr and these different phones.
Yeah. And my wife and I were dating at the time and texting came out and she didn't have texting. So it wasn't like we could text back and forth. But I was so stupid. I was like, what is the point of this? Like, why are we sending 60 characters through a phone to somebody else's phone. Just pick up the phone and call them. It'd be faster. And so like when the whole thing came out, I'm like, this is so stupid. What is the point of this? This
is never going to work. Probably faster when you had to hit each key like three times to get to a letter, you know, back in the day.
Right.
You could, like there wasn't like a keyboard
per
se. Yeah. So that was my real beef with texting. I mean, this isn't even getting into the like, which issues do you cover via text and which ones ought to be a conversation?
Sure.
Which if you're raising a generation younger than you is a real thing. Like, no, you don't dump people by text. You also don't like, text is for informational purposes, not for relational purposes, other than like just the little touch points, you know, like.
That's a good, I like
so,
that,
you know,
informational, not relational.
We're both traveling right now, so I'm sure we both text our spouses, you know, I'd say I love you, say goodnight, but like, that's a touch point, but that's because the relationship exists in person.
Right, it doesn't replace a conversation.
Yeah, right, and so I think that's another thing is that the number of young people, and I'm not crapping on a younger generation here, who haven't simply been kind of clued into the fact that like, no, anything that is a high stakes relational thing should be handled in conversation.
Yeah.
And texting is not conversation. It's a different form of communication. And so they'll be like, oh yeah, I texted them my apology about a signal. I'm like, that's not a real apology.
Right.
It might've been very well
meant. You might've meant it. Yeah, for sure.
But it's not going to be received with the same way to looking somebody in the eye and saying, I'm so sorry that I said this or failed, whatever. So those are kind of my two grumbles. We could probably go on and on about this.
So it's not a replacement for real conversation.
No, it can't be. It is a very useful and immediate way to share information, but very little relational capital can be shared that way.
Very good. I like that.
All right. Well, there's our curmudgeon moment for this episode. And this has been episode one of the Curious Curmudgeon podcast. We hope it's been encouraging, thought-provoking, and at least a little bit entertaining for you. A little bit. Thanks so much for listening and tune in next week.